Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBA Front Office Show. Happy Friday. Friday edition coming in here. Always exciting. We've got a weekend coming up. And also more exciting, we've got some quality NBA basketball going on. We've got a Game 7 now that we get to talk about. At least
yeah,
one
we
of
do.
Them. So that's exciting. We'll talk about that. I'm Trevor Lane. You can find me on Twitter at Trevor_Lane, over on Instagram at TrevorLaneNBA, joined by Keith Smith at KeithSmithNBA on the Twitter machine. Keith, let's just... I hate talking about injuries, particularly serious ones, so let's just start the show with this. We'll rip the Band-Aid off. Danny Green, that injury we saw last night, Joel Embiid falls into his leg, Green's leg gets twisted underneath him. The second I saw it, I went, ooh, that's bad. This is not good. My wife has a background in athletic training. It's not what she uses now in her career, but that's what her degree is in athletic training. And so I called her in and I said, she's pretty good at diagnosing injuries. And I said, what is this injury? And she said, oh, so that could be anything. That could be everything in that knee. That's bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
We could be talking about, I mean, this could be the end of Danny Green's career, given his age and everything. So how did you react when that injury happened, Keith?
That was the very first thought I had, was this might be it for Danny Green. He's going to be 35 next month. It's a year injury. You know, I mean, maybe something comes back and it's not as severe, you know, as it looked. But when you start getting the reports almost immediately after that they worry of the significance, like, that tells me they know it's probably pretty bad. So, yeah, so we're talking a year to come back. So that's because of when it happened. That's probably missing the entirety of next season. So that'd be going into year an age 36 season, having not played a year. That seems, you know, pretty unlikely to me. He has a fully non-guaranteed contract for next year too. So that's highly likely that'll get waived. Then they'll move on. That may have happened anyway, just with what Philly's kind of facing roster wise. But yeah, this sucks. You know, this is a guy who kind of really became like a self-made guy, you know, for his entirety of his career, because he was not someone who like popped in the NBA right away. Like he kind of had to work to get there. Was, you know, not a thing for him initially. And he, you know, really worked hard and earned his role in San Antonio over years, won a title, at least a couple titles with the Spurs, and then won one in Toronto as well, and then won with the Lakers too. So, right?
Yeah.
He was on that league. Yeah, he was.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, so just, you know, just brutal. You know, for years and years, he was kind of the epitome of the 3-and-D guy when you thought of that on the wing.
Yeah, I mean, he was the guy that everybody looked at and said, "This, we need a Danny Green type player, a guy who's just going to defend like crazy, going to be smart, going to put himself in the right spots, and can hit the open three when it's available." Terrible, terrible, terrible. Like you said, the non-guaranteed contract. Even if his, like, had that injury not occurred, he would have been somewhere next year. Some team, even if the Sixers declined
Without
that option, someone would have definitely picked him up. So this is this is devastating. I mean, not just to the 76ers and what that meant for their chances in the game last night, because I think that does that hurt them. I'm not going to say it was the deciding factor, but it definitely hurt the 76ers' chances to compete last night. But for Danny Green, potentially being the end of his career, I mean, this cost him what could be a lucrative contract next year, whether or not that option was picked up. And it could mean the end of Danny Green in the NBA. Now, we're talking doom and gloom here. Of course, we hope that's not the case. Hopefully, he's able to recover and he comes back, and maybe he's 36, but he still finds a way to contribute. I mean, we're seeing guys who are older in the NBA that are still contributing. I mean, LeBron, PJ Tucker, Chris Paul. You've got a number of guys who are still able to contribute, but to varying degrees. But it's just something that we have to consider when you've got an injury like this. Combined with his age, we would be, you know, remiss if we weren't talking about that being a possibility.
Yep. Yeah. Danny Green won, just to make sure I have this right, he won 3 NBA championships. So one with the Spurs, one with the Raptors, and one with the Lakers. So, incredible career for a guy who, was the role player in the league for so long. So I mean it's hard to go much beyond that, but brutal to watch it kind of go like this. And I know some people are throwing a ton of shade at Joel Embiid, saying, that's when you're flopping around like that and stuff. And it's just one of it happens. Like, it sucks. It's part of the game, but it happens. Guys get rolled up on, and sometimes it's severe injuries.
Yeah. So it's certainly unfortunate. Just to put a bow on it, when I think of the modern era of the NBA and the way the game has changed, I think of 3-and-D wings, and I think of pick and roll bigs, right? You think of the rim protector / lob threat big. And when I think of that archetype, I think of Tyson Chandler as being the guy who kind of helped usher that skill set as far as the bigs into the NBA. And I think of Danny Green first when I think of the 3-and-D wing player. So it really important in terms of creating, I think, that modern skill set that the NBA is looking for. Let's jump into that game itself, though. A lot of people right now, and we'll get to Embiid, but a lot of people taking a lot of shots at James Harden, 0 points in the second half, did not look like the guy that could carry a team. What does Philly do now? I think that's kind of the lead here in terms of coming out of that series. What does Philly do now with James Harden? I've got a lot of people saying, you can't max this guy. You can't give him a max salary based on what we've seen here in the playoffs.
Yeah, so let's just get into the numbers. In a must-win game, 43 minutes, took 9 shots, 7 of them three-pointers, no free throws for James Harden, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 turnovers, just 11 points. Spent, in my opinion, the vast majority of the second half looked like he was completely disinterested in being on the floor, playing at all, just wasn't pushing, having any kind of impact at all. I mean, you've got Embiid out there, beat to crap, doing everything he can. And this is a guy who, the one we focus on, right, is the mask now. He's got, his second face. But he's also got the thumb injury. I think it's probably pretty clear he's dealing with he's just not moving well either. No. So I'm thinking there's probably some form of knee or leg stuff going on too there. And, he did not play well either. So, we can be very clear about that. But, Tyrese Maxey didn't shoot well. No one really played well for Philly, minus Shake Milton off the bench. But to get into the Harden specific stuff, this is now, well, what is it they say? It's a feature, not a bug. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a feature with him in the playoffs and must win games. He's just not good. Rarely is he ever good with this. So he is, that has to give you considerable pause if you are the 76ers on what do you want to do. Now, I've seen some saying, like, they can't give him more than $20 million a year. Like, that's crazy talk. Like, it's not going to go that way. But I don't know that I'm here's a full 5-year max offer that pays you $60 million when you're 37, 5 years from now. I'm certainly not doing that. I would probably try to do a, can we do something shorter term, maybe a 2-year max, something like that. See where this goes, see how this develops and go from there. Hey, and we'll see. Maybe the best path forward is just let them opt in for next season and then play it out from there after that. But right now, you know, I think both at the time, we both loved the trade for the Nets and the 76ers. And right now it looks like a mess of a trade for both teams.
You know, I think it was StatMuse, who is becoming more and more of a meme account that I'm seeing. Yeah. He was focused on stats, but they put out there that Ben Simmons and James Harden both scored the same number of points in the second half for the 76ers last night. And I'm like, that's, yeah. I think here's the difference, right? You said Embiid didn't play well. The entire game, mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh my gosh, Embiid is gonna hurt himself playing in this game. That's what I was afraid was, and maybe that's a little bit of, you know, Anthony Davis is still in my head because I was having some flashbacks there, seeing what Embiid was doing.
Sure.
But I was watching that game going, Embiid, there was a moment where I thought, okay, he knows they're not gonna win this. And in his head, he's just saying, I'm giving this everything I've got then. I'm just whatever. I'm gonna walk away having given everything I've got. I can't say that for James Harden. Like, there's a difference. Joel Embiid played poorly, but played poorly, giving everything he possibly could to try, you know, fight through whatever physical ailments he was dealing with. You could see he wasn't right. He played poorly, but he played poorly, giving everything that he could. James Harden played poorly, but you never felt like he really wanted to be there. And what is that about, particularly when you're saying, you know, now you don't give him a 5-year deal. Now you don't give him the $60 million. He's got, beyond whether or not he cares about winning on the team level, you've got millions upon millions of dollars on the line too. You would think that would be motivation enough on one side or the other, either as a competitor or as someone who wants to get paid. You would think that would be enough to get you going. And instead, we saw James Harden that very much looked like he wanted to be somewhere else. It's baffling. Yeah. That this is what we continue to see out of him in big games.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's not much more to be said because no one can explain it except for maybe James Harden. And you know, he's clearly not going to, and nor does I think he really wants to, right? Or and maybe he doesn't even have the answer himself. I really don't know. Switching over to the Heat side, because let's, you know, they won this as much as Philly lost it. Jimmy Butler did not shoot great, but he was great. I guess that's the best way to put this. I mean, he has really been, you know, clearly in a series with Harden and Embiid and others, he's been the best player in this series. He was the best player in this series. You know, absolutely dominant again. 32 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, 2 blocks, 42.5 minutes for Butler. Gabe Vincent out there kind of did the Kyle Lowry-ish look-alike. He, you know, kind of ran the show, got some assists, played defense, did his thing. He did a really nice job guarding in between Harden and Tyrese Maxey quite a bit of the game. Bam Adebayo was great again, and PJ Tucker showed, you know, why teams want him all the time. He just kind of was out there doing his thing, playing well. So, you know, the Heat back in the East Finals, they're going to be tough. And now Lowry will have basically a week off because the East Finals isn't going to start at the earliest until Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So he'll essentially have had a week off or so to rest up and hopefully get that hamstring healed up, because they're going to need him, because Philly doesn't play defense the way Boston and Milwaukee do. So whoever gets through that series, like, the Heat are in for a completely different look defensively there. But I mean, and my guess is we'll see Duncan Robinson reemerge because they're going to want to have some more shooting and open up the floor a little bit. But Miami's tough. It's going to be, you know, no matter who it is, Boston or Milwaukee, it's going to be really, you know, a incredible East Finals, I think.
It's going to be quite an adjustment for Miami. Right. I mean, it's you're climbing out of the pool and jumping into the jacuzzi, right? Like, it's going to be that kind of a shock in terms of the defense. Not saying the Phillies defense is awful, but it's not the same level as what they're going to see in this next round. Max Strus, I thought, was particularly good in this one. 20 points, yeah. 11 boards, 5 yeah. assists. He was hitting big shots. And it felt like just...
He's basically taking the Duncan Robinson yes. role, but he's a little bit better with the ball in his hands and a little bit better defensively.
It felt like there was a moment there in the third quarter where the Heat just... They just keep coming, and they broke the 76ers. Where it got to a point where the Heat just said, no, we're winning this. We're ending this tonight. And the 76ers went, yep, yep. That's what's happening.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Spot on. Like, yeah, you could see they made that little run, I want to say, at one point in the third quarter. And then it was like, well, they that was it. Like, you made your little run. We're here. Now off we go.
You know, you've mentioned before that every once in a while your Boston accent really comes out. That when you said quarter there, that it came out on that one. Yeah. That was a good one.
It pops every once in a while, usually unintended.
Let's get into we do need to talk Suns Mavs, but let's touch upon a little bit of news before we jump back into another series. The Hornets mm-hmm. interviewed former Lakers head coach Frank Vogel. I think it's great that Frank Vogel's getting an interview. I think the fit is terrible.
Yeah.
I think the fit is terrible for this one.
Yeah.
I think you're putting Frank Vogel, if he were, I don't expect him to get the Hornets job. It would be recreating the issues that you had with the Lakers to some degree, where you'd be giving Frank Vogel a defensive team that's not very good defensively. And we saw how that goes. So I think it's great that he's getting head coaching interviews. I think he's got a bad rap and that he should get those interviews, but I don't think this is the right fit for him.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. I want to see him get another chance, but this team is awful defensively. They don't have any plus defenders really on this roster right now. Probably the closest thing is Cody Martin. PJ Washington can be okay at times, but I mean the rest of these guys, and Terry Rozier, I don't know what's happened to his defense, but he has fallen completely off. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, part of me says sometimes when you're trying to improve on one end, you ruin yeah. what made you special on the other end. See the New York Knicks this past season. So lean all the way into your offense, hire Mike D'Antoni and just, you know, score 120 points a night and just, you know, play up tempo and really fast and see, maybe that, you know, pushes you into the playoffs, because it hasn't been working what you've been doing. So, you know, I have no problem if you say, man, just forget it. We'll just forget defense. We'll lean fully into the offense and go. Well,
speaking of that, of Mike D'Antoni, we didn't touch upon it. Is Doc done in Philly?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think so. I'm a little surprised. It's almost lunchtime here on the East Coast, and I'm a little surprised we haven't gotten the Philadelphia and Doc Rivers mutually parted ways yet. I thought we might get that early this morning, but we'll see. I mean, I think it's probably done. I mean, it is tough because I know he has at least one more guaranteed deal or guaranteed year left. So let's see. We'll see.
All right. Let's talk a little Zach LaVine. So Brian Windhorst of ESPN saying that Zach LaVine may be a little bit more available than what we were initially thinking. Mentions the Detroit Pistons and Portland Trailblazers as potential landing spots. Keith, I've been saying all along that Zach LaVine, while he wants to explore free agency, I didn't see an option out there that would give him a better chance to win than Chicago. But Portland is interesting if they can figure out a way to make that work, to go team up with Damian Lillard and Anthony Simons there. What do you think? How does this, well, I guess let's get into the contractual stuff first. How does a Zach LaVine move work? Do we have to see a sign and trade with Chicago Bulls? Can he get to, are there other teams he can get to just signing outright? Where does all that fall?
Yeah, that's the tricky part of this is there's only a couple teams with cap space, and let's face it, Zach LaVine he's going to be a max guy. He's not taking less than the max. So that turns into, where do we kind of go from here with this? If you're Zach LaVine, because if you're going to need a max contract, all right, so how are we going to rebalance and reset this with some of these teams? Because the only team that can really get there to give him a max is Detroit this summer. And they were one of the other teams that was mentioned. I mean, that would be super interesting. I don't know about a Cade Cunningham, Zach LaVine pairing in the backcourt long-term, especially defensively. I think you're asking for a real nightmare there. But Portland becomes interesting. Again, yeah, you've got the same kind of issues with Zach LaVine and Damian Lillard, but it's important to remember that's where he's from. He's from the Pacific Northwest. So I think there is a chance we could see that be maybe the pairing we see is he goes there, and now Portland can go a bunch of different ways this summer. They could basically wipe the slate clean, but then you're talking about Damian Lillard, Zach LaVine, and not much else. And I think we've kind of seen how that goes in Portland when it was Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and not much else for a lot of the past decade or so.
Now they would still keep
Zach
Simons,
LaVine
right?
is much better.
In that scenario.
Yeah, they would probably keep him, but that's three guards, right? And you know, no bigs, no wings, no forwards. Like it would just, I just don't know that's, you know, where I would go. You could do it as a sign and trade, right? They could offer up Josh Hart, Eric Bledsoe, if they wanted to go that direction. You could make it work that way. If that's, you know, where I wanted to go, they could do picks, but Portland and picks are a little bit of a weird situation. But my overall takeaway from this is just Zach LaVine's in play and not a lock to re-sign with the Bulls. I would still say that's what he does, but we'll
Keith,
see.
How's this for timing? As we're discussing this, I just got an email from a radio station in Portland wanting me to come on and talk about this, situation with Zach LaVine. That's funny. That's perfect timing. but it'll be interesting to see ultimately what happens with Zach LaVine. We've been saying all along that this year's free agent class isn't going to be all that exciting, and that, you know, Zach LaVine probably winds up staying in Chicago, and you know, most of the major pieces aren't out there and available. I think this adds a lot of intrigue to this free agent class if Zach LaVine truly is out there on the market. We'll be fascinated to see what ultimately happens here. Now, I mean, on paper, Zach LaVine, Damian Lillard, maybe Anthony Simons is in the mix. I don't know if he could be in your closing lineup. I don't know if you start him, but I mean, that's three really high quality scorers that you've got. The question is, can you then build a team around those guys with whatever you've got left?
None of them have real good size, right? They're all very much guards.
Right.
Like that's the other tricky part. Yeah.
So we'll see what they ultimately
do. Hey, let's go to another thing. Mm-hmm. This is just coming out, and this is really interesting. I don't even think you've seen this yet. ESPN, so Woj and Ramona Shelburne, I'm just going to read the tweet. Kyrie Irving has long had one of Nike's most popular and profitable signature shoes, but uncertainty surrounding his NBA future leave Nike unlikely to extend him to a similar signature deal beyond next season. And Mike Vorknov from The Athletic said, first kind of sports business now, but used to cover the Nets, says this is big news that Nike would have apprehensions about Kyrie Irving's future, combined with what Sean Marks said earlier, indicates a level of volatility and institutional uncertainty with an NBA star you usually don't see. For those who didn't see it, and I don't think we've talked about it, Sean Marks did his end of season media availability, and he said basically that we want guys who want to be here and guys who are going to be available to play, and if you're not, like, we don't want this. So that I think is the like it's just crazy that this is where we're at with, you know, one of the you know, premier players in the you know, NBA, and you know, here we are. But unbelievable. You know, I really don't know what to make of this one. This is just, you know, another weird situation.
I mean, if you flip it and we think, because we always think of things, or at least this is the way I'm assuming you think of things this way. I think of the NBA side of it first. I think of the basketball side of it first. I think of, you know, how you know, roster construction and all that. What does it look like on the court? I tend to think of the business side of it, or the you know, revenue side of it third, usually in my list of things, the way I look at a story. Mm-hmm. But when you do force yourself to look at it from Nike's perspective, from a revenue perspective, I mean, do you have any certainty that Kyrie at some point isn't just going to mid-season say, "Nah, I don't feel like playing anymore. See ya."
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, you just
absolutely could. Yeah. In the article, there's this line that says, "The turbulence surrounding Irving, which includes the Nets' non-committal stance on negotiating a long-term contract." I mean, it tells you what you need to know. Yeah. Right there.
So
right there. I mean, that's,
if the Nets are questioning whether or not they want to give Kyrie a long-term deal, that should also bleed through to Nike saying, well, if the Nets aren't going to commit to this guy long-term, will he even be in the NBA in 3 years? Right. Yep. So why should we give him a 5-year deal ourselves? You know, I mean, that, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this is normally, right, we don't cover the sneaker stuff and all that stuff. Other people do that who have far more interest and are far better than we are on that. But this part of it related to the Nets part, this is a big, big story. And this is going to be something now, you know, we're a month and a half from free agency starting. Like, this is going to be huge going into that. It's going to be really something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk Suns Mavs. Game 6. We're going to have a Game 7. Game 6 for Suns Mavs. The Mavs come out with the win.
I should have had the Zaza queued up. The Zaza Pachulia. Game 7, baby. Game 7. But I did not, alas.
Oh, opportunity missed. Opportunity missed.
Oh, well. I did a pretty good impression.
I think that counts. I think that counts.
Yeah.
Suns and Mavs, going back to Phoenix game, I still think ultimately Phoenix gets the win, but credit to the Mavs. Man, they taking care of business, doing what they need to do, forcing maybe the title favorite, or certainly one of the favorites, particularly coming into the playoffs, to a game 7 in round 2. This is impressive stuff. We've been talking about how dangerous this Mavs team can actually be, and they now have the Phoenix Suns on the brink. And this is a situation where if you're a Mavs fan, you're just excited, right? Because you're not expected to do this. And if you're a Suns fan, you've got to be pretty nervous right now about what's going on here and the possibility of, you know, of the Suns going home in the second round. I mean, I don't think I think the Suns win, but it's a non-zero chance that the Mavs come out there and get it done. I mean, when you're playing against Luka Doncic, I mean, there's no guarantee that Luka isn't going to come out and drop 45, 10, and 10 or something and bring the Mavs to a win. Like, that's definitely within the range of possible outcomes. And I'm excited for a game 7. This one's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's what's really, really crazy is they are coming off 2 30-point games.
Yeah.
You know, 2 30-point blowouts back-to-back games where the Suns destroyed the Mavericks and then the Mavericks destroyed the Suns. I mean, neither one of these games was ever really close. I mean, this one was, I mean, I guess, but not, it wasn't really, you know, especially, you know, after we got through midway through the second quarter, this one kind of stopped being close. So, yeah, I don't know what to expect in this game. So I'm with you. I think the Suns will win. I don't know. Like we're going to see. I think this is going to be a really interesting. If the Mavs are going to win, it's super huge analysis and breaking news here. They have to play defense. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only way they can beat this Suns team, because the games where they've won, they've held them in check. They've kind of gotten to Chris Paul, they forced a bunch of turnovers, and they've been able to win that because then they get themselves a bunch of easy points. If they lose, it's going to be because the Suns do whatever they want offensively and kind of run around and do their thing. So it's just been a weird series.
Mm-hmm. It has. My favorite series of the second round has been Warriors Grizzlies, but because they've been, you know, they've been, well, except for the last one, they've been closer games, these hard fought games. But
sure.
This one, it's interesting the way that we've seen the Mavs really attack the Phoenix Suns. There's no sense of, oh, the Suns, they're just, you know, they're the one seed, they're the better team. Like, the Mavs have come out here to win this series, and they've done a great job getting after these guys. I mean, Doncic is, you know, 11 boards, 8 assists to go along with 33 points, 4 steals. Like, that's going to get the job done. When you turn the Mavs over, or the Suns over, 22 times and only have 6 turnovers yourself, that's showing defense, that's showing a recipe for success. I don't expect the same thing to hold up in Game 7. It's really tough to overcome that big of a discrepancy in turnovers, and that's what we saw in this game, why we saw the Mavs, or part of why we saw the Mavs get the win. But if the Mavs have an edge in turnovers, what if it's 18 to 10 or something like that, or 16 to 8 or something in turnovers? I think that's going to be the key stat. If they can do that, the Mavs, I think, could be in business, and we're going to be in for a really close finish down the stretch.
Well, the Suns, when they've had success, have targeted Luka and been able to really get after him, whether it be through pick and rolls or straight attacks or whatever it is. They've got to get back to finding a way to do that. Dallas has done a really good job in their wins of basically moving. They're pre-switching stuff. They're doing a lot of jump switches, which is when you switch, but two other guys are switching at the same time. So you're just basically getting him out of whatever mismatch Phoenix is looking for. They've got to be good about that and trying to get going downhill and getting after him, because that's the way you're going to win.
So the first two games, I think this is going to be critical here. The first two games. Chris Paul, 19 points and 28 points, both fairly decisive Suns wins. The last four games that we've seen in this series, which have featured 3 Mavs wins and 1 Suns win, 12 points, 5 points, 7 points, 13 points. Now, foul trouble has been a factor in a couple of those games, but this is Chris Paul's moment now. Game 7, I think it's going to take Chris Paul stepping up and having a 15-plus point night in addition to solid assist numbers, and he's got to get those turnovers down. Had 5 turnovers last night. As much as people talk about, Chris Paul is older and all that, Devin Booker should be stepping up more, things of that nature. And I think Devin Booker's largely been pretty good in this year. He's been really good. I think this is Chris Paul's legacy. Right. This is an opportunity, and who knows when this is going to come around again for him to win a championship. Game 7, I'm looking for him to really, really step up from the Suns side.
Yeah, I think him plus somebody, right? Whether it's Booker, Ayton, Bridges, somebody else needs to step forward and provide, 20 points to and go. So yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, game sevens are great. So whenever we get one, it's a great time.
Okay, thoughts on tonight's game before we call it an evening here. We've got game 6 for your Celtics and Bucks, game 6 for the Grizzlies and the Warriors. So going into Milwaukee, it's always interesting when the team leading the series has game 6 on their home court, because everything can flip if the away team wins that game. Suddenly the away team gets home court advantage back. So how are you feeling about your Celtics tonight going in against the Bucks, given how, that was a devastating, you've talked about it a lot on social media. I said the Celtics really gave away game 5. How are you feeling going into game 6 here?
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Yeah, I mean, they have a great chance. They've been in all of these games. When they play 48 minutes and don't turn the ball over and don't let the Bucks get out and running in transition, they're fine. It's when they turn the ball over and then they go into this extreme slow down, kill the clock stuff, that's when they fall apart. So they just got to play it out. They can score against this team. They've locked them down in the half court defense. You just can't be throwing the ball around. It's just not a, you know, it's just not a way, you know, for this to work. So I think that's the big key, is keep him out of transition, keep control of the ball. You know, Giannis is going to get his, yeah. You know that. I mean, that's just a guarantee, but you just got to lock in on everybody else and I'll let them get going too around him. And then you'll be all right. So I think I feel, you know, I don't feel great. I think I expect Milwaukee to win, but it's not going to surprise me at all if Boston wins. I think there's, I don't know, 40% chance, 45% chance that the Celtics win and force a game 7.
Milwaukee is the favorite by 1.5. So really, really close. I mean, look, the odds makers are predicting that this is going to be a very, very close game. So looking at this, you mentioned slowing the game down, walking the ball up, things like that. That is like my pet peeve officiating wise this year, and I think they're going to get rid of this. We've been talking about it all season. It's the take fouls, stopping transition, right? I think they're going to get rid of. My pet peeve in terms of teams making choices, it has been what you're talking about. When teams get a lead and then they stop doing all the stuff that got them that lead in an effort to try to burn the clock. And it's part of why I really like the Elam ending that we've seen, you know, in the All-Star game and things like that, because you can't do that. There's no benefit to doing this. It seems like more often than not, what?
I hate the Elam ending. You don't like it? I hate it. Hate it with a passion. I love it for, like, the All-Star game and stuff. I think if they do this mid-season tournament, great. You'll run it there. But, no, I don't want it, any part of it in
I'm not saying put it into the regular season. I'm saying the thing that I like about it is it eliminates that. It eliminates teams having incentive to try to just run out the clock, because I feel like more often than not, it's dangerous when you do that. But again, the fix can be don't do that. You know, just continue playing with pace, continue to play with aggression.
Yes, that's
what I'm saying. I'm saying the Elam ending, just it eliminates that. So that's what I enjoy about the All-Star game. And if they do that for the midseason tournament, do it. Don't bring it into the full regular season. But you can't. More often than not, I feel like, and this is anecdotal, but when teams do that, they try to sit on a lead. What they do is they inadvertently bring back their opponent into the game because they take themselves out of everything that they've done offensively. Then they're missing opportunities. That gets their opponent in transition, gives them easier scoring chances. And next thing you know, the game starts getting close. The pressure starts mounting and things can go sideways from there. So that I dislike that strategy, and I think that's what we saw out of Boston and was a big factor in the Bucks getting that win.
Yeah, I mean, you're up 15 with 2 minutes to play. Yeah, run clock. Sure. Like, that's fine. But the Celtics started doing that with a low double-digit lead with 9-10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That's not way too much time, especially with the way teams shoot threes and everything else. So that's not it. So, I mean, we'll see, but it's going to be a fun one tonight. I think we're going to get a good one. On the other one, I think there's a chance the Warriors kill the Grizzlies. I think this might just be an absolute blowout. I think the Warriors punted last game. They, more so than anybody else with that veteran core that's been through it all, is like, yeah, we don't have it tonight. We're out. And I think they may go. But, I mean, this Grizzlies team, I don't know. Every time I feel like they're done, they're not. So, you know, let's see. But I do think the Warriors get that win.
They, I mean, the Warriors pulled their starters, what, halfway through the third, right? Like, that's how bad that, I mean, but it was like a 50-point game, which is ridiculous. But I agree. I hope that's not the case. I want to see a close game here. And who knows, if the Grizzlies force a game seven in Memphis, anything is possible there. But I do think the Warriors get the win in this one, and I think the potential for a blowout going the other way is pretty high. I think the Warriors, as a veteran team, had their pride hurt in that game five, and they're going to come back with a vengeance in game six. Again, it's not what I'm hoping happens. I hope it's a close game throughout, and we get a battle, but I think the likelihood of a blowout is up there. I think the Warriors, as of right now, let me double check. I want to say they're like an 8-point favorite in this. Yeah, they are an 8-point favorite now. No, 8.5 now. 8.5-point favorite in this game. The Golden State Warriors are, so yeah. Odds makers agree that the blowout potential is high.
Yep, good, yeah. I mean, they're just, you know, they know, I think, too, it's going to be really tough. They have to go back to Memphis, so get this done now. And in, you know, they're also, they've got that whole 3-1 lead stuff in the back of their mind, sure. Also, and they're not going to want to listen to that whole nonsense again. Yeah. So yeah, I think you get them locked in, and they take care of it tonight. Yep.
All right, we have anything else break while we were going through all that crazy news?
Nothing that I saw. All right.
Well, it's going to be an exciting night of NBA basketball. Keith and I are discussing when we're going to do our next playback play-by-play. Things didn't work out this week, but we'll get on those. We'll have something out sooner rather than later. Yeah. We'll do another one of those. And yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. Make sure that you do subscribe to the NBA Front Office YouTube channel. Don't forget to give us that 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Till next time, everybody. See ya and stay safe.